Hello and welcome to this live edition of the Albion Obsessed podcast. Thank you for joining us this evening. We're going to be talking about this week in the news of Brighton and Hove Albion. And of course, we'll be talking about the game that happened today. As ever, if you've got your thinking caps on, you want to get joined in this discussion, please drop some comments. I know Dagan is always very good at keeping his eye on the chat. So without further ado, let's see who we've got on the show tonight. We welcome back Joe. Joe, my friend, how are you?
I'm feeling good, mate. I am feeling very, very good. Almost like after consuming a five-star meal or staying at a five-star hotel. Yeah, feeling very, very refreshed and ready to talk about all things Albion. So yeah, all good. Oh, Luke Link's in the chat. Hi, Luke.
Hey, Luke. Hey, Alfie. Thank you for joining us this evening. And I've just got a quick story about five-star hotels. I went there on my honeymoon because, you know, it's honeymoon. You want to splash out a little bit and tell you what, I had such imposter syndrome. I am not posh enough for a five-star hotel. It's not for me, guys. It's not for me. But less about my honeymoon and more about Dagan. Dagan, my friend, our stateside correspondent. How are you?
Doing quite well, Tom. Sorry for the slow unmute. Happy days. We had an advantage come our way. Matoma was not injured, and we won a football match. So it's a good day to be a Brighton fan. Oh, look at that. Showing off the Matoma shirt. I like that, Tom. But no, I'm fantastic. Let's get on with it, as they say.
Fantastic indeed. And we also welcome Alex. Alex, you are our special guest this evening. It is your first appearance on the Albion Obsessed podcast. So we are going to bombard you with three questions. But before we do that, how are you, mate?
Yeah, fantastic, man. What a result. Kind of karmic, right? After that horrendous tackle, I think it was nice to give them a bit of a thrashing after that. But yeah, really good. Lovely. Great Sunday afternoon.
Seven. Good. I'm glad to hear it. So as I say, Alex, whenever we get a guest on for the first time, we always like to ask them three questions just to sort of help the audience get to know them as an Albion fan. So the first one, Alex, is when was your first Brighton game, be it in person or watching them on TV, whichever came first?
Yeah, so Goldstone for me. I think I was, I barely remember it. I think I was about eight or nine. So it was a long time ago. Would have been in the mid-80s, to give you a clue how old I am. And then it was a 1-1 draw against QPR. It wasn't great, to be honest. Because I used to really love Steve Foster, and he'd gone by that point, I think, or he wasn't playing. So I was a bit annoyed about that. I loved his headband. I always wanted a fuzzy headband, but he was kind of my favourite player at that time. So that was it. My dad took me, and yeah, kind of hooked from then, I think.
As you can tell, Alex, from behind me, I love football shirts. Tom, you love football shirts. Dagan, we've got you into football shirts. Alex, what is your favourite ever Albion shirt?
Oh, it's a difficult one, isn't it? There's so many great ones. Like, go right back in the 80s, the old Nobbo. What's that red and white one, which is the classic, which everyone loves. Some of the Santex ones were amazing, but you know what I'm going to go for? Because I didn't really start buying shirts until I was a bit older, until kind of the Amex years, really. I love that red and black AC Milan kit we had. Do you remember the away kit we had? That was, I thought that was mint, man. That really took me back to the 80s and kind of Milan. I thought it was a great shout out and a lovely kit. But you know, similar to the green and black this year, there you go, that one. Yeah, I've got mine upstairs as well. Lovely kit, that.
Yeah, it's an absolute beauty. Dagan, would you like to take the third question? Because, you know, you're the man. You're the guy. You're that guy.
So our third question is always, who is your all-time favorite Albion player?
Well, I've already mentioned Fozzy, but I think he's kind of been superseded down the years. For me, there's only one, really, because he kind of encapsulates the kind of, as we started to rise as a club. You know, I watched so many games at the Wythene, and it was miserable and wet and, you know, 1-1 against Wycombe Wanderers or something. But Bobby Zamora, for me, is the Phoenix. You know, he kind of represents that pushing us up, the promotions, just the goals, just watching him play. I loved it, man. He's a legend. And I think, yeah, he'll always be in my heart as someone to get, he brought us up as a club.
Yeah, 100%. Always my Albion idol as well. So, Alex, before we sort of get into the Albion news and, you know, the game analysis, just want to talk to you a little bit about your little project, which is the Brighton and Hove Albion Reddit page. Fantastic resource out there, guys. If you haven't checked it out already, you can find Alex. You're on, I was about to say Twitter, but it's not Twitter anymore, is it? It's X.
X.
And of course, Reddit. So, Alex, tell us a little bit about how it came about and, you know, what sort of like drove you to do it.
Oh man, well I've been a Redditor. I think my account is like, oh, it's like 16 years old or something. I've been like on Reddit since the beginning, so a long, long, long time ago. And I was kind of chatting around the football subs and our soccer when it was tiny. It's massive now. There's like 300,000 or 400,000 subs on there. It's crazy. But and some of the other, you know, our Chelsea and the Man United one, they're all pretty massive. It wasn't a Brighton one. We kind of someone else I was chatting to set one up. We had about 20 subs, I think, and then slowly I got more and more involved, became a moderator, and we've turned it around. Now we've got 17,500 subs as of today. So just to let you know, in terms of Reddit, that puts us in the top 5% of sports subs on Reddit, which is pretty huge. And we're chasing down Crystal Palace. So we need subs, right? Crystal Palace have got about 18K and we've been slowly catching up with them, like slowly, slowly, slowly creeping up on them. So if you do want to join, come and join it. It's on our Brighton Hove Albion. If you go onto Reddit and just search for Brighton Hove Albion, you'll find us. I'll put a link up in the comments in a bit. But yeah, come and join. It's a great community, global community. We have people from all around the world. You know, you can chat about any subject, put your memes up. It's good fun. It's really, really good fun. And great match day chat as well. And the match thread, it's really interesting live chat. And yeah, it's a great community. We really love it. And moderated. So you don't get the trolls.
Yeah, it's brilliant, Alex. And guys, it is really worth checking out. So if you haven't done so already, please, you know, go and check them out. And, you know, we can't let that lot up the road get one over on us. We can't accept that.
Yeah,
I mean, I know
you're
definitely in a relegation battle, generally speaking. And I always I started likening Crystal Palace to more of a pantomime villain rather than an actual rival, because they're just so nothing. But I will not stand for it. I will not stand for them having more subreddit subscribers. So go and check them out, guys. And join in the conversation, because that's what it's all about.
You know, exactly. Exactly right. It's brilliant.
Definitely. And we're going to start our own conversation. We're a little new segment this week in Albion News, because there's been quite a lot of news going on this week. And I'm just going to open it up to anyone who wants to join in. You guys can join in the chat as well. Thank you, as I say, for joining us on this live edition. The big news that came out this week, guys, is Roberto De Zerbi is being heavily linked to Barcelona. So this is the news that was shared upon some X users like Brightonian and Owen and Brighton Bubble, that apparently the bigwigs at Barcelona have given it the green light. They've approved his signing. And as long as financial issues can be resolved, De Zerbi might be finding his way to one of the biggest clubs in world football. What do we all make of this news then? Because it's the straw that I'm clutching at is the fact that over the last few years, especially, Barcelona have been not in the best place financially speaking. So I can't imagine that they'll be able to afford a compensation package to Brighton. That's what I'm telling myself anyway. But what do you guys think of this? I mean, Joe, I know that you're a big fan of Barcelona, but surely your Brighton pride must come first.
Oh, 100%. If they get Roberto De Zerbi, I shall be extremely annoyed. But I don't think it comes as any shock that Roberto De Zerbi is starting to get linked to a job as big as the Barcelona job. I don't think I'm wrong in saying it would be a big sort of rebuild job, because Barcelona certainly aren't as good as they used to be. And he's got a lot of youth prospects coming through there. but wouldn't maybe have the backing financially that he would expect to go on to if he was to go to a big job. Like if obviously the Liverpool job's coming up, if he goes there, I'm sure he would have more financial backing at Liverpool than he would at Barcelona. And I don't know what pressure he takes, because for me, there would be a lot more eyes on him if he was to take such a huge job, such a huge name. If you go anywhere in the world and mention Barcelona Football Club, everyone will know who they are. And that is a big thing to take that step from little old Brighton, who have just got into the Europa League for the first time, up to, you know, one of the giants of sport, not just football, of sport. So be interesting to see how that sort of develops. Of course, we want him to stay at Brighton. But I don't think we're silly enough to think that it's going to be Roberto De Zerbi will stay at Brighton for the next four or five seasons. I think it's only a matter of time until he goes, unfortunately. So we just got to enjoy him whilst he's here, as Dagan said.
Yeah, definitely. I can't remember who it was, but there's this lovely quote accredited to some coach or manager about saying how coaches and players, they're only borrowing the club. The club belongs to the fans. And I think that, you know, we all very much love Roberto De Zerbi. We love what he's come in and done for us. But at the end of the day, he's in this for his career, first and foremost. And I like to think that because he grew up supporting some little underdog team from Serie A, that, you know, the big names of Europe maybe don't appeal to him as much. Because I always got the impression that, you know, taking to Brighton to Europe would have been like, you know, this massive thing. And I foolishly and perhaps naively like to think things like, oh yeah, he'd much rather stay with Brighton and try and get us to the Champions League, because that's a much more, well, on the face of it, it seems like a bigger achievement than taking a European giant to European finals. But, you know, that's naive to think. I mean, Alex Dagan, what have you guys made of the Barcelona chat?
First of all, I agree with you about the money. I think, can they afford it? You know, they've obviously been in real financial stick recently. I think we all want him to stay another season at least, right? But just to carry on the amazing work he's done. The thing that struck me is, though, it's another sign of just how massive we are. And I know we shouldn't really say, but do you know what I mean? It's like our managers are being poached by Chelsea, and, you know, backroom staff being patched by, you know, Chelsea. I don't know. They were linked with someone else as well, right? And then now Barcelona. These are the biggest clubs in the world, and they want our staff because we're doing such a good job. And I think it's just another sign of that as well. So I hope he stays. I hope we get the contract signed. I mean, obviously, that's been rumoured for a while. Andy Naylor made an interesting comment about how his opinion was that he thought De Zerbi would go, but it would be for one of the big Italian jobs, which I thought was interesting. You know, he wants to go back and do, I think he's always been linked with one of Milan clubs, hasn't he, or Juve. I can't remember which one he prefers. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting comment, but who knows? We have to wait and see, right?
Yeah, we do. And a lot of people in the comments saying, yeah, Chelsea are after our head of recruitment. Yeah, that's right, Phil. They certainly are. The Sam Jewell Dagan's been linked to Chelsea. Ironically, the person he replaced also went to Chelsea. That was Whit Stanley. Again, maybe I'm just being really naive, but I'd like to think that anyone would look at Chelsea at the moment and think it's a complete mess. So there's no real direction. The person he replaced went to Chelsea and hasn't exactly done a particularly good job. All of the coaching staff that went to Chelsea, none of them are there anymore, apart from Ben Roberts, I think. The players aren't particularly doing very well. I mean, financially speaking, must be a huge step up. But what have you made of another person from Brighton being linked with Chelsea? Just because, you know, Chelsea are literally just copying Brighton's homework at the moment.
Well, so I mean, I get it, right? You get an opportunity to go someplace that like that, double your wages, triple your wages. It's a life-changing amount of money to be able to bank that kind of salary. And if you are saving the majority of it, you know, you're building years and years out. So financially, I understand it. From a reputation standpoint, they aren't doing well. So if you go there now, you're not ruining something that's elite, but you do have the potential to put them back on top. So from that standpoint, I see the attraction. It is a little bit of a dumpster fire, but the beauty of going into a, you know, situation like that is you can't really lose. I mean, unless you get the club relegated, you know, you never want to follow the best guy. No, right. Yeah. That would be the dream of dreams. But I think for us, like, what we should now know is none of these guys, managers, scouts, they don't have the keys to the kingdom, right? Like, this is Brighton's system, Tony Bloom's proprietary model, it's Star Lizard. Like, we're going to be okay. So I just don't worry as much about the personnel leaving, whether that's Sam Jewell, whether that's Win Stanley previously, whether that was Graham Potter. And even as much as I hate to say it, De Zerbe, and I think the difference with De Zerbe is as much who he himself, like what he himself brings, right? The personality, the aura. And I think that's exactly what makes him so attractive to these big clubs. I've heard a lot of people say, I don't think he's ready for it. And I would just argue, no one's ever ready. No one is ever ready for a responsibility like that. And if you are ready, it's because you've done it and you've probably been fired somewhere else, right? Because you didn't do a good job. So, like, he's going to get a chance. Like, the idea that he's not big enough, he's not ready for this chance is foolishness. He's going to get an opportunity somewhere. It's going to be his work to decide if it's the right opportunity at the right time, in the right place, whether that's Napoli or one of the Milan clubs or Liverpool or Barcelona. That's for him and his team and the financiers to figure out. Tom, I think your point's right. If we win Europa League and get Champions League next year, he just might stay if he hasn't agreed to a job already. He may say, you know what? I haven't finished what I started here. Tony Bloom, pay me like a Champions League manager, and I'm going to stay for another year and see what we can do here. Because I think he does care about his legacy in that way. With that said, if we miss that and he has that opportunity somewhere else, I think he takes it.
Yeah, it's hard to see a situation where if things don't fall into place here and another club does come in, you know, it's going to be hard to keep hold of him. But we'll deal with that if and when that occurs. No point worrying about it now. What is it that Hagrid says in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire? No point in worrying about it. What's coming will come and we'll meet it when it does. Just getting a casual Harry Potter reference in there. Let's turn our attention then to slightly more positive things. And that is one Simon Dingra. The lad had an absolutely fantastic AFCON. The AFCON finals last Sunday, I believe. Got two assists for their two goals. Got the man of the match in the final. Was young player of the tournament. Lifted the AFCON trophy as hosts. And was welcomed back by the club. An absolutely sensational week for Simone Dingra. And of course, he topped his week off very lovelily, that doesn't make sense, very well today with a brace against Sheffield United. But let's just focus on that AFCON bit, Joe. What a moment for the lad, because obviously it was looking like he might miss a large chunk of the tournament due to injury. No, did really well.
Yeah, really nice moment for him. And selfishly, another really, really good moment for the football club. You know, 2 years in a row, having a player win a major international trophy is just, you know, what dreams are made of as a Brighton fan. Seeing your talent, what you brought in, what your club have worked so hard towards, coming off, not just for your football club, but for their nation, is such a special thing to watch. And to see him play as well as he did is just, like, it topped it off. And obviously he went into the tournament injured. It was a great call by their manager to include him. I don't know who made that decision, because I believe, didn't Ivory Coast have their manager sacked after the group stages or something ridiculous? So whoever made that call, fair play to them. They should get rehired based on that call, because Dingra in the final was just electric. And he was so for the other two games that he featured for. I'm not sure if the final was the only time he played 90 minutes, but two assists and man of the match. young player of the tournament after only playing probably just over two full games. That is incredible. And people talk about Ferguson being a next £100 million player, Mitoma going for silly amounts. We should be obviously thinking about Brighton keeping Adingra, but how much he will be worth. Insanity. And he's bringing that form back to the Premier League, not even a week after winning the thing. It's credit to him. And he's such a good player. And links on well to what we want to talk about next. Obviously, the Right to Dream Academy, the Danish team that I cannot pronounce.
FC Nordsjælland.
That's the one.
I think that's how you pronounce it, FC Nordsjælland.
So we're getting a similar figure in for more money than what we paid for Adingra, granted. But, you know, if that can work as just as well as Adingra, we're really onto something. And it links onto what Dagan said. This club know what they're doing. This club know how they recruit. Doesn't care. I don't care who is head of recruitment. This football club knows how to recruit. So hopefully Osman does just as well.
Yeah, I mean, Osman coming in, that's big. He's spending the rest of the season out on loan. And Dagan this week, Barco finally touchdown as well. So, you know, some good positive news there as well. I know your boy Barco is really excited. It was really nice this week to see him in the kit.
Yeah, I'm certainly ecstatic about that. Let's hope Osman predicts well for both. Just the highlight of my week, I think. Osman saying, I will be joining the esteemed Brighton family in the summer. A thrilling adventure awaits, where I shall soar like a majestic seagull, embracing boundless horizons of possibility. That is just uplifting.
That's some energy there. That's some energy, man.
a little chat GPT in action.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's phenomenal. But I will say, I think there's some reason for these young prospects to sort of gush and glow about the opportunity to play for Brighton, which I know it doesn't compute with you guys, but you know, financially speaking, over the past 2 years, we've had the 23rd most revenue in the world. 2 years running.
I think wasn't there like some other news this week that we have the second best financial end of year in the plus ever, only behind Spurs after they sold Gareth Bale all those years ago. So that's pretty spectacular. I might have to cite my source on that, but I'm pretty sure it was something like the second best financial season ever. Yeah. So that's ridiculous. It shows you, as you say, Dagan, how well run this club is. And I think that is the thing to hold on to, no matter if Sam Jewell goes, De Zerbi goes, when our best players eventually do move on, you know, that conveyor belt of talent behind the scenes, as well as on the pitch, keeps turning. So
it hasn't been disrupted yet. They keep coming and people keep saying, oh, we've bought this guy's going to come to us now, you know. And Dan, what's his name, the guy who's going to go to Dan Ashworth, who went to Newcastle, who's now possibly going to United. And yeah, that guy's, well, you know, he's obviously jumping ship at the earliest chance, making his money, fair play. But, you know, that hasn't disrupted us. And all these teams, you know, they're always going, oh, we've got Dan Ashworth, we're going to get the Brighton recruitment thing. And it's like, no, that's just one guy in a team. And all of it is, as you say, you know, it's Tony Bloom's system. It's you can't buy that.
No, you can't. And I think it's really funny seeing Newcastle fans having the same conversations with Manchester United fans that we, as Brighton fans, were having with Newcastle fans when Ashworth decided to go there, which I find...
Did you know, Tom, that Dan Ashworth was at the meeting in 1901 at the Seven Stars pub to form Brighton and Hove Albion Football Club?
I had heard a rumour. I think he was actually there on that day in Hereford in 1997. He actually put on a Brighton shirt.
Scored the goal.
Pitch, yeah.
Incredible.
I know. That's our wrap-up of the week in Brighton news then, guys. Let's actually talk about football, a football match, I should say. Just the small matter of Sheffield United. I was, I'm not going to lie, I was looking ahead to this one thinking, oh, you know, an away game against bottom of the table, Sheffield United, We beat them in the FA Cup, but it's a league game. We've been here before. We know what's going to happen. But no, I was glad to say I was wrong. I was very, 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 very wrong. I came into the game a little bit late because I just got in from my morning errands. And one of the first things I saw was could be described as nothing better than GBH. The big moment of the first 10 minutes, Holgate lunging in on Matoma, initially only given a yellow card, which in and of itself is like a whole other thing, because apparently Stuart Atwell thought that was just a yellow. And then it's a tragedy in three parts. One, the tackle itself, which was absolutely horrific. Two, the Holgate, what did I do? I didn't do anything. As if what he did was absolutely fine. And then, as I say, Stuart Atwell only brandishing a yellow card that was then quickly overturned into a red for dangerous play. And I must say it was one of the worst tackles I think I've seen in a long, long time. Joe, you've said it on X about it's just lucky that Matoma hadn't planted his leg, because that's a potential leg breaker.
Mm. Yeah, I'm extremely lucky. The more I watched the tackle back, the more fear came into me of what could have happened. It was so high up on the leg that had Matoma's leg been planted on the ground, I don't know, I'm not a biologist, I don't know what bone it is right at the top, but it could have snapped that in two. So for Holgate to be like, I don't know, oh, that's not, what are you doing, ref? Why are you going to VAR? And then the worst thing was after the game, I don't know the name of the player because he's completely irrelevant, was saying, oh, I watched on the pitch, so it's never a red card. Never a red card. And then he goes, oh, I haven't seen the replay. Well, and then he goes, oh, well, the replay probably makes it look worse. And it's like, how on earth do you see your player lunging like that, go down to 10 men after, what, 13 minutes? And not absolutely come out and berate him?
Yeah, Chris...
You should be fuming with your player for doing that after... Because the guy goes on about game plan. Game plan goes out the window. That's not the referee's fault. That's not VAR's fault. Certainly not Matoma's fault. It's Holgate's fault. So why put it on the other side? I don't get it.
Yeah, I saw people saying, oh, it could have been a slip, or you just don't get your leg up that high if you're slipping. I mean, I've fallen over. My leg doesn't go up that high, I can tell you that much. But, you know, it's a very bizarre kind of, lots of excuses, lots of kind of, even from the fans as well, you know, trying to make excuses for it. But it was,
The fans booing Matoma as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Ridiculous.
And Wilder at the end coming out and saying it was missed time. That's not missed time tackle. Missed time tackle is going in late. That was going in high. It's endangerment.
How? Yeah, missed time, because it should have been in the 1970s.
In the 70s or the 80s, that would have been perfectly acceptable. That wouldn't have even been a foul. But my goodness, how anyone can look at that and think that's not reckless endangerment. I don't know. Dagan.
Yeah, I mean, in real time, I can imagine, and I think this is where VAR does its job, is, you know, the ref can give the yellow and know that it's going to be looked at as a hostile and dangerous act, and if it's worthy of a red, it'll be a red. I know, you know, they're not meant to do the job of the official for him, but there was a lot between him and the ball there. I think he just may not have gotten a good look at the contact that happened, just being that it happened on the front side of...
Ooh, did we lose Dagan?
We've lost Dagan. Dagan makes the point well there, that in between the referee and the action, you know, there is players in the way. So perhaps that is the reason why, you know, the yellow card was only brandished straight away. So that's fair. And this is very much, as Dagan says there, a really good example of how VAR is used correctly. Because the initial on-field decision was a clear and obvious error. And VAR have gone, no, that's a red card. So, you know, we're very quick to moan about VAR when it goes wrong, rightfully so. But I think we have to praise it today because they also got the Sheffield United offside goal later on in the game correct as well. So I think it was a good day for the official there. Fair play, I will say. So there's that. But I think, you know, the red card, you know, does change the game. I think I've been a Brighton fan long enough to know that Brighton versus 10 men, you know, most other fan bases might be going, right, 6-7-0 here against the team at the bottom of the table. But I was thinking, if we don't score soon, you know what's going to happen. You just know. But thankfully, Joe, it didn't take very long. It was a bit of a strange one because I don't think the players really knew what had happened, whether it was going to be given or not, but it eventually was. It was a cross into the box, headed back across by Dunk. Webster did some strange thing. But I initially thought Webster had scored, which is why I was like, Webster? Webster scored? But no, it was Buonanotte who turned in from close range. A bit of confusion about the goal, but it was eventually given. A bit of a relief from my point of view. How did you feel when the ball hit the back of the net?
It's one of those goals, isn't it, that you just know we would concede. Like, there's been some bizarre goals that we've conceded in the past, and that is 100% one that would have just, like... Do you remember the Newcastle one in the Championship where, like, he miskicked it, it flew up, it hit the post and hit Stockdale and went in? It was, like, ridiculous. For us to score one of those, because I was celebrating and I didn't know why Buonanotte stopped, because the ball hits the roof of the net. So it's clearly a goal, although VAR missed quite an obvious one a good few seasons ago with Aston Villa versus Sheffield United. So I'm lucky. we're lucky that we got that one. The funniest thing about the goal, Tom, and this is what I thought you were referring to when you said Webster, was the ball comes to him and he goes to nod it in just to make sure it's a goal from about a yard and misses. It's like, oh my gosh. So
that's why I thought it was Webster, because I thought, you can't miss from that distance, surely. But Webster did, and Ferguson also did a bit later on. Nice. So both of them should be feeling a bit sheepish about that. A bit of a mad one. But Dagan, you know, we did manage to score, get one up on 10 men Sheffield United. I was hoping that then the floodgates would open, but we did have to wait a little while. But some fantastic play, all coming down the wings. What is this? Brighton and Hove Albion with wingers? I haven't seen this in quite a while, but how refreshing it was to have Mitoma and Adingra running at Sheffield United and causing all sorts of problems.
It was delightful, wasn't it? Just to see the pace. I mean, the pace on the left-hand side with Lamptey and Mitoma being able to interplay with each other was refreshing. And like, oh, right, this is what we look like when we're humming along, even without, you know, João Pedro, you know, up top and playing centrally. I mean, yeah, it was fun to see. I have to say, I thought the commentary after the game was really tough on Sheffield, just sort of implying that they rolled over and died. Like, didn't it take us to like the 70th, 75th minute to get the third? So I just felt like, they fought and did what they could without truly packing it all in. Like, they were trying to hit us on the counter, but being judicious, trying to, I felt like, hang around in the game, which is the best thing they could have done. You know, it was bold and looked odd when they pulled their striker and added Trusty. But it was, I think, the correct decision. So I thought they were treated harshly by the commentary to kind of paint them as this, you know, hopeless operation. They did get a big win at Luton, which again was shown today is not an easy place to get a win. So they're not as bad as, you know, they looked down a man for the whole game today. Like, they are a Premier League side. I know they're barely one, but for another few months they are, and they've shown some fight. So I took note of that, and I feel like it undercuts the quality that we showed. I thought in really being sort of self-possessed and not going too hard for that third goal, like it was going to come, but we were patient and kept our balance to not get, you know, just annihilated on the attack like we did to lose last week.
Yeah, to be fair, that's a good point. And perhaps, you know, I myself was a bit impatient for that. I did feel like their goalkeeper was foddering him. I think he did make some very good saves, certainly kept them in it at times. But eventually, you know, we got the second goal, which made things a little bit more comfortable, Alex. It was that guy, Danny Welbeck. I think it was Matoma volley that was kept out by Wes Fodderingham, but the loose ball fell to Danny Welbeck and he smashed it into the roof of the net. He's a man that has been in the news this week in terms of Brighton because his contract runs out in the summer. He said openly that he doesn't know if it's going to be renewed or not. What have you made of Danny Welbeck in a Brighton shirt this season? Do you think he deserves another year, maybe, or do you think it's time that we looked elsewhere?
100%. I love Welbs. Give him another year. Why not? I think he's been so important, especially when we've had all these injuries. He's still, you know, he's obviously had a bit of time out himself as well. But you know, when he comes back in, he gives it his all. He's, you know, I think before the game, he'd had two assists and a goal in the last three or something like that, or the last four. So, you know, he's getting in amongst it. He's making things happen. And I don't think, you know, he's such a smart player. You know, he's always thinking. And, well, I mean, that goal today, the second goal, the amount of space he had, and I know that's terrible defending, but he found that space. He obviously just, you know, was standing there going, no one gonna mark me. I'm just gonna tap it in then, you know, I'm just gonna smack it in. So, you know, it was a fortunate goal from that point of view, in terms of it was easy for him. But yeah, give him another year, definitely 100%. I'm a big Buonanotto fan, by the way. I've been backing him for a long time, so really nice to see him coming good. And you know, people all around me where I sit will be very pleased that I've got more Facundo ammunition when I go next week.
That's funny, Alex, because I've been one of Facundo's biggest critics. I've not been overly harsh on him. I've not sort of gone as far as what some people say on social media. But I've always known that there's that little bit more that we can get from him. And I commented on his attitude last season a few times, walking around, not running back to defend. However, this season, sticking around, biding his time, being patient, coming into the team. Dagan, what was the stat? Ninth consecutive start?
Yeah, consecutive starts for Buonanotto. Nine.
So that's incredible. And to get his fourth goal of the season?
Third league goal, yeah, I think. Yeah, fourth in the cup as well, yeah.
Just fantastic to see that mentality shift in the lad and to see that he really does have that workhorse in him to get to the next level, and that's something De Zerbi's been punching into him, I think. So I think I have to give a full screen apology sort of thing to Facundo Buonanotto, because yeah, he's really come good.
Yeah, he has, and I do think, you know, part of that is that shift into the centre, and I think now obviously we've got Dingra, we've got Matoma back. You know, he had started playing in the centre a little bit more, but then of course, with injuries and then international tournaments, he's sort of been shifted out back to that right hand side, because we know that De Zerbi loves a left footed right winger. But no, that energy that he's now bringing to the side is absolutely fantastic, and I think he's showing a lot of potential. Yeah, really glad that he scored today. In regards to Danny Welbeck, I thought he did a lot of work off the ball today, as well as on it. I think he drags players out of position really well. He creates space for other people. A lot of unselfish work there for that guy Welb. So for me, yeah, I'm with you, Alex. I'd love him to stick around for another year. He brings that wealth of experience. He comes across as a really decent bloke. He might not be the most clinical of strikers, but you know what he does on the pitch should never be sort of undervalued by the fans. Definitely. Stick him, keep him around for another year, I say. Signed a ting. So let's talk then about Albion riding their luck a bit. We've sort of already touched on it. It would have been the most Brighton thing ever to go 2-0 up against 10 men Sheffield United, just to concede before half time and give Sheffield the impetus to go on and try and get something out of the game. It's a bit of a defensive mix-up that led to the corner. The corner comes in. The ball does find its way into the back of the net. I think initially the referee blows up for a foul on Verbrugge. That's the impression I certainly got. But then it got chalked off for VAR offside in the end. That's my understanding. Again, a bit of a confusing sort of few minutes there. But ultimately, the right call, Dagan.
Yeah, it seemed it. If my understanding of the interpretation of the rule is correct, the rule is that the defensive player has to intentionally play the ball. But because it was accidentally played, it was not an intentional play of the ball by Buonanotte, the offside stands. Had Buonanotte been attempting to chest the ball back, for example, then that wouldn't have been the case. But it just ricocheted off of him. And that was the ruling. So that seemed to be pretty clear. But not a rule that is known to all, clearly not to all Sheffield United fans who at that point just were apoplectic about the, you know, PGMOL's corruption, and they were ready to leave the league because, you know, that and the red card decision were just, you know, shambolic in their view. So that was fun. Good fun times on Twitter.
No, guys, you're about to leave the league because you can't win games of football. It's one of those. It is what it is. It would have been a very Brighton thing to concede there, but the rules were interpreted correctly, and we sort of got away with one there. But a bit of squeaky bum time. But hey ho, when is it not when you support Brighton over Albion? If you're looking for a stress free life, go and support.
I got a bit of flashbacks to the cup tie when they scored that goal, and I was like, oh no, here we go.
It would have, yeah, it was almost like you're just waiting for it to be a repeat of the cup game, and then it would go to 2-1, to 2-2. But thankfully, that didn't happen because, Sheffield United down to 10 men with their tails up, that could be quite a hard game to manage. Halftime came at the right time for us. We made some changes at halftime. Igor and Moda came on for Lamptey and Webster. I was a bit surprised at the Webster substitution. I'm not sure if that was injury related or tactical. I know we went to like a back three in the second half, but considering how good Webster is in a back three, that sort of surprised me a little bit. I get the feeling, Alex, that De Zerbi doesn't rate Adam Webster. Now, on this podcast, we've had a big chat about Adam Webster. Lots of times. Where do you sort of sit on the absent Adam Webster discussion? Do you rate him? Do you think, you know, he came in under Potter? Do you think he's a De Zerbi type of defender?
I think he can be. I think he gets a lot more criticism than he deserves, firstly. I think he deserves some. I think he gets more than he should. He's been in and out a little bit, hasn't he, this season? He's not had the run. He's not been sat next to Lewis as he would be. I think today was all right, actually. I thought he had a decent game. No kind of mistakes. I thought the substitutions were good. I think Lamptey was getting himself into a bit of a state at the end of that first half. He got the yellow, and I think they were winding him up. I think they were targeting him, and I think that probably would have continued. So I thought that one was smart. And then my man Jakob came on as well, so I was happy about that. But yeah, Webster... Would he be around next season? I don't know. It depends on if you can get someone else in. That's the thing. I'd keep him around. I think he's a decent squad player, and he complements the rest of the team well and plays well with Dunkey. So yeah,
I thought he had a good game today. To be fair, as well to him, and playing as more of a right back than anything else. And I think I genuinely recall De Zerbi saying that Adam Webster was one of those players that he liked having around the dressing room. I do agree, Alex. I like Webster. I think he's a good player, but he's someone's just put in the comments he'll play badly for 10 games and then he'll be the best player on the pitch in two. It's consistency for Adam Webster. Consistency, and I think injuries have sort of marred that a little bit.
He had a recent game where he played reasonably well too. That was Sheffield in the cup when we played a back three. I think this is kind of the level where he looks good. I think when we see the top level teams, he doesn't. Whether it's the speed of his reactions or the speed, he just finds ways to get lost against the.
I think we've lost Dagan again.
We've lost him again.
Shooting. But this does mean I get to cut in because the is he back?
If I was to say, if he's okay being the fourth or fifth choice, maybe he does stay. Because it's hard to find the guy who's okay being the fourth or fifth choice center back. So if he is okay with that, and we're okay with what we're paying him to be that, then perhaps it's a good fit of, you know, character and you know, opportunity that's a little more limited, you know, for a guy who's happy to be where we are. And there's nothing wrong with that. Somebody has to be, you know, that guy. We need that guy on the roster. I guess the big question too is he taking the spot for, you know, a young guy we think is ready to be that next choice? That maybe is where the rub comes in.
I think naturally the older he gets, he'll want to be playing more football. He'll start sort of feeling that when he's not getting game time, he's getting more rusty here and there. So I think that obviously if he does move on, Adam Webster would be a top class signing for the likes of Sheffield United, Burnley, or even someone fighting at the top of the Championship. Alone, as Osprey says in the chat, could be really beneficial for him. Like if he was to go out on loan to, I don't know, whoever's chasing promotion in the Championship next season and be that, you know, big centre-back and get them up, I think that would give him a boost. And go on to play the rest of his career at a level where he can really thrive because there are so many qualities of Adam Webster. And I don't like the fact that he's turning into the sort of meme that he is amongst the Brighton fans. I feel like he deserves more respect than that. I feel like he's given so much to this club that we should be a little bit more respectful the way that we allow Adam Webster to leave or to you know, get back to the best that he can be. I don't think that's at a level where you're competing for Europe week in, week out. And I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, it's that consistency. If you get the Webster from Potter's last season when we played, again, I think it was that game against Chelsea. It was just ridiculous. He was so unbelievable. So good. And we were sat here talking about Webster for England. That seems like a very long time ago now.
I think that's injuries, isn't it? Just the continual injuries have just seemed to have knocked out of the game. He was our record signing for how long?
We got Webster for what, 20 million? And then didn't we get...
Was it almost straight after?
Yeah, I think it was almost straight after we brought in someone else. Sod's law. I do agree with what you said, Alex, about Tarik Lamptey. It's been great seeing him back, but he was getting wound up at the end of that first half. So that was a smart move from De Zerbi. And it did mean that Jakob Moda got to come on. And we've just starred a message here saying, would you say that Moda deserves to be playing as much as he has with his, in my opinion, mediocre play recently? Or do you think it's time to give someone like Baker Boaty more game time? I don't know if he's had that much game time. I don't think we can really...
Alex is wearing the Jakob Moda shirt. He's clearly a very big Jakob Moda fan. What do you think, Alex? Do you think Moda's that sort of player that can get up to the Zerbi level and be a big player under him? Because I certainly think so.
I hope so. I mean, like when we had glimpses of him before his injury, before that terrible injury, you know, you could see he had that technical side of him. He'd play... He could play around the park. He could play in the middle. He could play on the left. But, you know, and he looked like one of those players who could be kind of box to box or whatever you really want him to be. He'd fit into that mold. He's physical. He's strong. You know, he's got some pace on him. He's not the quickest, but he's got some on him. And I think, you know, as you say, when he's come back from the injury, he hasn't really had that much chance. And he had a solid 45 today. I thought he was fine. I thought he was great. And again, he's one of those players who isn't spectacular. You're not going to see anything spectacular from him. Although he did have that ball across the box towards, I think, was it just before he got the third or just after? I don't remember. But that was a lovely ball, really inviting ball for anyone to get onto. And I thought, yeah, solid 45. And let's see some more.
The recovery run he made as well when there was a long ball through from their goalkeeper. McAtee was running through on goal and Jakob Moda was quick. To get goal side of him, not foul hit, Fowler player. It could have easily been a clumsy James Milner versus Mikhailo Mudryk sort of situation, tangle of legs, but he gets goal side of him and stops a really good goal scoring opportunity. So I think Jakub Moda will get to a level where he can be a really big player for the Zerbi.
I think the problem that Jakub Moda has at the moment is he has got two players in front of him, a bit like Billy Gilmore last season. Moda has got Gilmore and Gross in front of him. And at the moment, you know, they are performing so well. I mean, let's talk about Pascal Gross then, because Pascal Gross, my goodness, another two assists today, created eight chances, 110 passes, 97% passing accuracy. The man is just, he goes from strength to strength. You know, he completed over 100 passes with over 90% accuracy. That's just ridiculous. And yes, it was against 10 men, so there's the context of that. But this is a man that at the beginning of the season, I was questioning whether pigeonholing him into certain positions was something that would eventually hold us back. And it's been really fantastic to see him sort of cement his place in that double pivot with Billy Gilmore, who was also has had an excellent season. So I think that those are the two things that are stopping Jakub Moda getting more game time. The incredible Pascal Gross and the superstar that is emerging in Billy Gilmore. I mean, Joe, let's talk about, you know, the Gross then. Phenomenal today. Absolutely phenomenal.
Always is. Bar the odd awful team performance, I think Pascal always stands out as the guy that's going to be the engine. It's going to be the mentality all the way across the pitch to run and to fight for every ball, but to also drag the team forward. And eight chances created today, Tom. It's just, and again, the context is against 10 men against Sheffield United, but it's a Premier League game. I don't care what one it is. All Premier League games are difficult. And to be the guy that, you know, is so massive for a team like us and has been for six seasons, I can't remember exactly how long. And I always go back to the moment where Graham Potter wasn't playing him. And it baffles me to think back to that and to think that he wasn't being utilised in a season where we were craving chance creation. I'm so thankful that he's been able to stick through that and be the icon of Brighton's time in the Premier League, Brighton's time in Europe. And when 10, 15 years, 20 years time, when we look back on Pascal Gross as an Albion player, is going to be right up there. I really, really do believe that he's going to be my all-time favourite Brighton player ever, if he's not there already. Just an absolute delight to watch. And it's actually quite something that we've still got him at this football club. How have other clubs not looked at Pascal Gross and gone?
Foley's currently going, who's this guy who's got eight assists for Brighton and Albion? I want to buy him. That's literally my impression of Todd Boehly. It's very bad.
It's crazy because, like, how have teams not looked at Pascal Gross and gone, you know, how good, and I'm not selling him here, how good could Pascal Gross be in a Manchester City side where he's got everyone around him that he can just ping passes to? It would be extremely dangerous. So we're very fortunate.
Well, it's taken him this long to get into the Germany side, which I think is a glaring oversight. From the German national team's perspective, but no, I think he's been such a ridiculously good player for us. Eight assists so far this season, which is a record he has now broken from himself. He broke his own record. That's just a very Pascal Gross thing to do. He's an absolutely phenomenal player, and I think he had a hand in the build up to every single one of our goals today. You know, Dagan, you've mentioned it. We had to be patient for that third one. We didn't push it too much, which was the right thing to do. Matoma was a thorn in the Sheffield United side all afternoon. Puts in a cross, gets turned in to their own net, it's an own goal. We'll take it.
Yeah, right. I mean, it was coming, But again, I think that's just, we wore them down in some respects. Just you create enough chances, even if it's not your foot or head, the ball ends up in the back of the net if you're in their box as often as we are. And I think in this case, in possession of the ball and putting so many good balls in, right? I mean, the 8 chances created from Gross with the 97.3% passing accuracy. I think I heard no one's had created that many chances with 100 passes and that accurate, like over 90%, I think was the metric that had not been met before. So, I mean, not only was he putting a lot of balls in, he was putting a lot of accurate balls in. Matoma was putting a number of balls in as well. Dinger, I think, played a fair few. I mean, there were a lot of opportunities being generated, some with no one on the end of, but yeah, it was bound to happen. Fortuitous that it came off them. But if it hadn't come off them, we may have been there either way. It was pleasing. It was nice. The third one was the one I feel like we were all nervously waiting for. The comment you made, Tom, which typifies, I think, Brighton fans. Well, this would be such a Brighton performance if we lost a 2-0 lead to a 10-man side, which I don't feel that way. Like I've seen some things go wrong, but not quite to that extent. Oh,
Dagan, one day let me give you a blow-by-blow account of the time we lost to 9-man Warsaw.
I've heard it mentioned. I don't want to know. I just want to pretend that is ancient history, Tom.
This is
Brighton now. It's an entirely different thing. Before we go, I do want to talk about changing perceptions week to week, but I won't do it just yet.
Yeah. Yeah, that's to be fair. It's a good point, and I'm interested to hear what you've got to say. Alex, let's talk about the man we mentioned at the start of the show, Simona Dingra. A lovely, lovely goal for Brighton's fourth, and it was created by that man, Pascal Gross. He swept in a volley from Gross's cross. Sublime finish, fantastic assist, and it finally seemed like the floodgates were starting to open.
Yeah, he'd been knocking on the door all game, right? I mean, he was fantastic. He brought that energy with him all the way from the Ivory Coast. It was amazing to see him. I was surprised he started, to be honest. And what do I know? You know, that's why I'm not a Premier League manager, because I was like, oh, really? You know, is he going to be all right to do this? But boy, he just brought that energy, brought that bounce. He was so up for it. And to get that goal, the best goal of the match, I think, definitely the best finish of the match. You know, he totally deserved it, and it's just lovely to see him. He's a great player, isn't he? I love watching him. You know, and Matoma as well today coming back in. Great to see that energy again. And as you said earlier, wingers. So it's just nice to have wingers again.
Two wingers. One came on from the bench, Ansu Fati. Obviously, we have Baker Boise as well, and Ciso coming back. Oh my gosh, it's just the best thing in the world to play with wingers. It's amazing.
And all these goals, our goal difference shot up again today. You know, we're 16 off West Ham now, are we? Or something ridiculous like that. So, you know, that's going to count. That's good. I mean, I can see them dropping off, but, you know, that's going to help us if we are going to be serious about getting a European place again this season.
They had a great signing in Calvin Phillips, didn't they, West Ham?
he's setting the world alight again.
I saw this fantastic video of some guy talking to this. He's being interviewed, and this guy was like, "Oh, the Yorkshire Pirlo, more like a Yorkshire pudding." And I thought that was just a really fantastic analogy. But what do you expect? He's been sat on the Man City bench for goodness knows how long. But Joe, back to our own wonderful game. Well, we talk about goal difference and how every goal is going to be important. Dinger rounded the afternoon off with a deflected shot, which Evan Ferguson desperately tried to claim, but failed miserably. But it did mean that Simona Dingra got a brace on his return, which is just absolutely fantastic for the young lad. Just a nice way to round off the afternoon.
I was desperately hoping that Evan Ferguson did get something on it, because I think a goal would do him the absolute world of good right now. You know, De Zerbi credited his Crystal Palace performance in the press conference before the game and really believes that Evan Ferguson can get back up to a level where we expect him to be. You know, what is he, 19? Still extremely young, so we can't expect him to be putting in consistent seasons just yet, in my opinion. So I feel like we give him some grace for that. He's still a massive player for us. The fact that we've got Evan Ferguson to come off the bench to try and kill a game is just a really good option. And yeah, Simon Adingra, what more can we say about the boy? Like, he's just been an absolute breath of fresh air, the lovely celebration. Wingers.
It's almost like having a team where all your wingers are injured has sort of hindered us a little bit over the last 2 months or so.
What makes you say that, Tom?
Well, it just so happens that the returning of said wingers has seen a certain dramatic improvement in performances, I think, which is worth mentioning, because we just look so much better when they're on the pitch. And of course, you know, in the run-in, that's what we're going to need. And I'd rather have had the sort of the downturn in form in January, December time, and then sort of end the season strong, which Brighton tend to do in the Premier League. They tend to have a dip around New Year and then come back strong. And I'm okay with that. Especially,
and then Everton come to the Amex and no, God. I'm not going back there. No.
Hey, and but I'm coming to the Amex, Joe, to watch that. And I always see draws, so I apologise in advance for the draw. But before we talk about Everton, I'm going to pick your brains, everyone, for man of the match. Joe, I'm going to come to you first, if that's okay. Man of the match, please.
Just sold my car to Simon Adingra. Just sold my car. Yeah, got to be him. What a week he's had. And capped it off with a Premier League man of the match performance. I don't think he got the official one. I think they gave it to Matoma in the end. But yeah, what a boy. Two goals, clear to see what he gives us on the pitch. And long may that continue.
Fair dues. Dagan, player of the match, please.
Two matches in a row. Pascal Gross.
Hard to argue with that. Alex, who was your player of the match?
It's between the three of them, isn't it? I think I'll go Pascal as well, actually. I think just for the all-round performance, and Adingra was amazing, though. So.
Yeah, fair shout. One player we haven't actually talked about, and I'm just going to mention him really quickly here, is Big Bart Bebrugge got his first clean sheet in the Premier League, which is massive. He made a save quite early on, which was really important. He didn't have a tremendous amount of things to do, but what he did, when he was called upon, he did all right. So I just want to give a shout out to him. He's not my man of the match, but I just thought he deserved a shout out for his first clean sheet of the season in the Premier League.
Had a bit of a dust up as well.
Yeah. rather them than me, let's put it that way. I'm going to be boring and I'm going to copy Alex and Dagan. Pascal Gross, just masterclass. What more can you say?
Sorry, Pascal, you didn't get a clean sweep because of me. Sorry.
I know, but I know that sometimes, you know, I've started the season off by saying, is this the right thing, playing him week in, week out at this position, at right back, at left back? But he's just constantly full of surprises, that man.
Did you know, Alex, that Tom once put Pascal Gross in his worst ever Albion 11?
With the context, please, Joseph, because no. That's sort of important. Oh yeah, in modern discourse, context, what does it matter? We were talking, Alex, about how when he played wing back under Potter, that was the context.
Okay. So I still don't think I put him in my worst Brian ever.
Oh yeah. It was because I forgot about I've forgotten his name again.
Gonzalo Cara Reyes?
No.
He was crap.
No, he was a lone player. I think we had him under Hupio. I can't remember his name.
Oh, Joe Matuk.
Yeah, Matic. It's because I forgot he existed. But no, that's a tale for another time. But for now, let's talk Everton then. I'm looking forward to this one because I get to come down to the Amex, which is a rarity. So I'm looking forward to this one. You'll be forgiven if you're having flashbacks to a not-so-pleasant time last season. But let's hope we can put those to bed. Joe, would you what do you think? Everton are sort of in a bit of a they're having a bit of a strange season, Everton. Obviously, they've been docked points. But they've also, you know, picked up some decent results along the way this season. They seem to be quite an inconsistent side. Are you confident, or is the fact that it's a Sean Dyche team coming to the Amex filling you with dread?
Always does. Always does. Sean Dyche versus the Albion. 3-0 Burnley. 5-1 Everton. Sorry, Alexis. You did score in that game. Sorry, mate. Yeah, I'm terrified. They obviously got a game before they play us. They play Crystal Palace tomorrow. If Everton win that, they drag Crystal Palace fully into the relegation zone. So I am a toffee tomorrow, but I certainly won't be come Saturday. Yeah, nervous, but hopefully we can take the confidence of a 5-0 win on. And, you know, Everton are also towards the bottom, granted, with the points deduction. But I think they are a team that we can expect to beat. But that's said very, very cautiously.
Ooh, Joe, you will have angered the football gods now. No, we can't have that. Dagan, what are your thoughts ahead of Everton? You talked earlier about like the sort of changing perspective of Brighton fans. I know I'm very much guilty of that. So Everton team, Sean Dyche, internally, I'm just sort of like hiding behind a cushion like I would in a scary film. What are your thoughts ahead of Everton?
Yeah, I mean, they are one of the teams that he strikes a little fear in my heart. Dyche is going to have his guys ready to play. If we can score first, we'll be in great shape. But if it's, you know, the game that they want it to be and they're permitted to be as physical as they would like to be and set a tone, I think, you know, if we don't see the foolish decision today, that was going to be a physical, ugly grudge match like the first meeting with Sheffield this year that was 1-1. So I think that's what we'll see. Hopefully we can show our quality. It worries me that we don't have João Pedro to sort of be shifty in the central areas. That's my biggest fear, because Everton's a tough team to beat in the air with the size they have at the back. Hopefully we can have a moment of magic and our overlapping, you know, wings can create, you know, a cross into space. That probably is our best chance to score. And just hope we don't concede on the counter, right? If we can stay balanced. But you're asking for a score? Is that what you're asking me for, Tom? You want a score?
You can give me a score prediction, Dagan, a general consensus. Loosey-goosey, I'm easy-breezy.
I'm going to say 2-1 to the Albion. We win it late.
I will take that late win. Alex, what are your thoughts ahead of Everton?
I'm strangely optimistic. I think after today, you know, and I know they're 10 men, but we broke them down and we just haven't been very good at that. And I think we're getting better. And I was impressed today in that last 20 minutes of how we broke them down, how patient we were. I think, Everton have had a bit of a rubbish season, but I'm quietly confident we're due one, right? And we're definitely due revenge from last season. So, yeah, 3-0. I'm going 3-0.
Ooh, I like
another clean sheet, Alex. Are you mental?
Yeah, another one. We might as well. And it'll be Bart next week, right? Because they get two each, I think, don't they?
It's the wheel of steel. It's the wheel of steel and Bart this week. It's gonna be a tough match. I think it's gonna be physical because it's a Sean Dyche side. And it just, I mean, hopefully we've had the experience of coming across teams like that in Europe with like AEK Athens. So we should hope, you know, and as you say, Dagan, today was a very physical battle, even against 10 men. So hopefully having these two games back to back will give us a sort of a way to handle it. If we can move the ball quickly, if we can not get bogged down against a team that are just sitting back and hitting us on the counter. If we can do that, I see no reason why we can't win this.
Tom, it'll be absolutely fine. And do you know why it'll be absolutely fine? Because you're going to be sat next to me. You'll be all right.
Oh, yeah, that's gonna be fun. But as I say, I don't go to the Amex as much as I'd like to, but I do seem to be a bit of a curse. And I went through a period of seeing only draws, which perhaps wasn't that surprising under Graham Potter, actually. So maybe I should not worry so much about whether I'm a bad hoodoo. But hey ho, I'm going to go with a very optimistic 2-0. That's what I'm going to go with. I'm going to say clean sheet.
I will go with 3-1.
Interesting. We've all gone for wins, which is good. But
I didn't say to who.
God damn it, Joe.
Brighton is fine. Don't worry.
We'll take it. You know what? I'll take 3 points no matter how it comes. No matter how it comes, I will take 3 points. Even if it's a last minute own goal, which I think is, it was the own goal at their place, wasn't it? Matoma cross, back of the net, I think.
Hit Dagan, just so you know, I voted 8th on your poll. So today's win's got me feeling a little bit more positive. So I've gone for 8th.
So that's a great point. So last week, after our game, ran the poll, where we finish. 2% said 12 or below. People didn't feel like 12 was there. This was a one hour long poll, last 125 votes. 10th or 11th got 26%. 26%. So that's 28% that thought 10th or lower. Same poll today, 10th or below, 4%. Only 4% after today. That's a humongous shift in perspective on one result. Now, I know we had some really favorable results from other teams this weekend that I think contribute to this shift. On the other end of the spectrum, the top seven last week, 17% said top seven, only 17. Today, out of 97 votes that were collected in a 15-minute poll, 37% suggested top seven. So 20% swing, both in folks that we think will be top seven and in those who no longer think will be in the lower 10. Eighth today was 44%, ninth 15%. Eighth or ninth together were 55 last time. So collectively, that stayed roughly in the same yeah. range. Eighth or ninth.
Alex, where do you think we'll finish at the end of this season?
I knew you were going to pick on me then. I'm optimistic, and I've remained optimistic all season. I think we'll get Europe. I think it's seventh, to be fair. I think it's probably conference. I don't think we can expect much more than that. Just look at the points of the table. Look at what United are doing now. They are definitely getting it on now, aren't they? They're pushing through. They're getting a few points. West Ham are going to drop off. Absolutely convinced about that. Some of their performances have been dire over the last few weeks. They've really, really, you know, the fans are getting tetchy again, which is never good for them, I think. You know, once they start, they had a Moyes out poster this weekend, I think I saw a picture on Twitter. So, yeah, I think they'll drop off. And I think, yeah, I think we can push for seventh. I think with all the players coming back, as we said earlier, you know, the wingers coming back, we naturally have a good end to the season usually. So I'm remaining optimistic.
I think one of those 37%. Seventh could potentially get us Europa League football, I believe, this season.
Oh, could it?
Because
it's the new format.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Oh, cool. Well, then even better.
And just before we sign off, Alex, can you just give the Reddit another shout out as well? Because we want to beat Palace's subscribers.
Yeah, please come and join us on Reddit. So I put a link up in the chat. I'll put another one up in there. But it's a great community. Come and join us every day. We have all the latest news, and you can come and comment on that news and have a little chat and meet the community. So there's lots of regular posters, and it's just really nice. It's a good place to hang out and talk about Brighton.
Thank you so much, Alex. And thank you, Alex, for giving up some time this evening to come and chat to us about Brighton and Hove Albion. I hope you've enjoyed your time on the Albion Obsessed podcast. Viewers, thank you very much for joining us this evening. It's been a fantastic way to chat. It's lovely to talk after a victory. It always is. Don't forget to like, share and subscribe for more content if you haven't done so already. Don't forget to check out the Brighton and Hove Albion subreddit. Go and subscribe to those guys as well. And all that's left for me to say is that wherever you may be, whenever you may be, we'll see you next time. Take care, guys. Mind how you go.